Good evening, everybody, and welcome to Take Two Radio. I'm Pam, your host, and tonight I have with me my lovely co-host, Dawn. Dawn, how are you doing tonight?
I'm great. How are you, Pam?
Very excited, like I always am, but even more so for tonight's guest. How about you?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. It's been looking forward to it all day.
I guess we'll go ahead and bring him on because everybody's been waiting with anticipation. So we want to welcome Vincent Irizarry. How are you doing today, Vincent?
I'm very well. Thank you, ladies. It's nice to be here. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. I should have said Daytime Emmy winner.
Yeah.
I was remiss on
you.
That, so naughty
but
me.
You, I almost hung up since you didn't give me that marker.
No. Yeah, and we couldn't call you back either.
That's true. There's a reason for that, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Everybody should have an escape route plan.
I know, right?
I know. Yeah.
But you'll never have to worry about that. We'll never, ever tell anybody, even if you did want to share. So.
Okay.
All right.
So what did you do today?
Today, actually, I had an appointment today. It was for the commercial audition that I had in Santa Monica, and it was a beautiful day here in Los Angeles. So I went there and did that. And, yeah, and had lunch there in Santa Monica and then came back just in time to call you late, literally about 10 minutes before I called you. So I was getting a little concerned when I was hitting these pockets of traffic. I'm like, oh, my gosh. There's like a blog radio show that I'm about to do, and I might not be there. That would have been fun. No, but I made it in time, thankfully.
Well, we're grateful for that. I noticed that you've done a few fan events recently, and
yeah.
The most recent one was in this month, just, a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
And you met up with a lot of your previous co-stars. How was that event?
Well, actually, I did two events in within a week period. First one was my show that I produce, Fall in Love Again with Your Favorite Film Stars. It's a cabaret style show.
Yes.
With live music. And we did it. It was me, Walt Lilly, and Bobby Eakes. It was supposed to be Jacob Young as well, but because of Sandy, the hurricane, he rightfully decided not to come because he was worried about getting stranded in New York. And he was supposed to work on Bold and Beautiful that week. That would have been a disaster for him. So we completely understood, and he was right, because he would have been stranded. Everybody's flights that were booked for the next day after the show were canceled. So he would have been stuck there till at least Wednesday, possibly even Thursday. That's what happened to everybody. It was the right decision for me, but we had a great time. The timing of it was bad. We were going to have a really great house, and that morning I woke up with Walt Willing calling me up on my hotel room number saying, you better wake up, man. We don't know if there's even going to be show tonight. They're calling it a state of emergency already, and they're talking and threatening about closing the bridges and tunnels and shutting down the subways and everything before the show. I'm like, are you kidding? I'm like, oh, my gosh. So but we did. They kept the show. The show did go on, and, it was too bad because even when I was looking at the weather at the time, it was strange to me because I was seeing where the weather pattern was. And it was down in Virginia, and I thought, well, there's no way it's going to get all the way up to us by the time of the show.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't understand why they were being so alarmist at that time that they needed to shut down everything by 7 o'clock and the whole thing, which was actually absolutely true. We finished the show. We did do it. And we had, like 50 people in the audience that were able to make it. I completely understood why people didn't come in because they were everything that they were fearing. But I walked out of B.B. King's at midnight, and there was not even a drop of rain. It was a beautiful night. I decided to leave.
You know, it's always the calm before the storm, right?
yeah, but it didn't really even start until, it just started raining around 3, 4 o'clock in the morning. And they shut down the subways and the buses at, 7 o'clock. And even people in Manhattan weren't able to make it. If they lived 2 miles away, they were afraid that they would get stranded. So it was tough. But we had a great show. It really was a lot of fun, and one of Bobby's, her nephew, came and sang also. He was surprised the audience of him. He was a young guy. He sang operatic, like classical. And
oh, sang, really?
He sang, what song he sang? What's his name? Bocelli's song with that Celine Dion did. with him. Not Celine, yeah, Celine Dion. So it was nice. It was very nice. He came and sang, and I had some other kids that were supposed to come and perform, and they weren't able to get in from New Jersey, which is a shame because I really would have loved to introduce them. They're amazing performers. But we had a great time. And then the weekend after, we did New Orleans, and it was nice to see Bobby and Walt there again. We all survived that one, but we were all a little exhausted from the whole week.
I'm sure.
And also got to see Daniel Goddard and a few other people as well, Eric Marstoff, which I really met him, I think, briefly in the past, but it was the first time that we get to hang out and talk. And it was nice. Everybody was great. It was great to see everybody.
Now, what do you miss the most about doing a soap? Or do you miss it?
I miss you guys. Well, I think anybody probably would love having this steady work and developing a character from week to week, month to month, year to year.
Right.
You know, I've been very fortunate with the characters that I've had the opportunity to play over the years. And, you know, starting with Lou Jack was an amazing character on Guiding Light back in the mid-'80s, and loved playing that character and watching how the character developed. You know, Scott Clark was a good character. It was okay. It wasn't my favorite of the ones on Santa Barbara, even though I loved being on the show. And I had some stories that were good. It's just that they couldn't seem to get consistent flow with the character of how in writing. And any actor is really at the mercy of what they decide to write for you. You can only do so much. And that was one of those instances where they just didn't seem to know how to commit to the character one way or the other. But then I was fortunate enough to be given a 3-month job on All My Children with David Hayward, and everybody could see the real potential in the character, and they decided to develop him, and I loved
him. So that was short-term when you started?
Oh, yeah, it was only supposed to be a 3-month gig. I was still living in L.A., and I just went there for 3 months to do the show, and before the end of the 3 months, they offered me a long-term contract.
Oh, my gosh.
There's a bigger story to that, actually, that Judy Wilson, who I adore, and she's now casting over at Young and the Restless. She, you know, when they first came to me and offered me the 3-month job, I was living in L.A. I had just moved there about like a year and a half before, maybe a year, actually, before. And I moved there because of my oldest daughter, Sienna, was living in Los Angeles at the time, and I was in Guiding Light for like 5 years, and she and I were flying back and forth every month to each other to be able to see each other. And when my contract was over on Guiding Light, I was really happy to get to L.A. so I could live by her. And I lived 3 blocks away from her, so I saw her constantly, and she was with me all the time and was able to actively be involved in her school with her, to be there with her and meet her, to take her to school, bring her home from school, and be a part of her life more. And it was wonderful. And when I first got this job on All My Children, I told her that, you know, that I was going to New York, and she was kind of in a panic. You know, to her, she equated New York with like separation anxiety. And I promised her, I said, you know, I promise this is a short term, it's 3 months, it's not going to be long, and I'm going to be back. And in that 3 months, you can come over, spend time in New York. She loves New York. It's just tough. So I said, we'll be done. When I'm done, it'll be over. And then they came to me before the end of the 3 months and they offered me a long-term contract. And here I was, I had a newborn baby with my daughter, Aria, and it was kind of a slow year before that. And they were offering me this, and it was really tough, offered me a good contract. And I bandied about for about a week with my agents and with the producer at the time, which was Francesca James and Judy Wilson casting. And after a week of it, I finally walked into Francesca James's office with Judy, and I said, I can't take the job. I have to turn it down. And they're like, why? And I said, I promised my daughter. I'm not going to go back on my promise. I told her this wasn't going to be long-term, and I made her that promise, and I'm going to honor it. And everybody was surprised. My agents were surprised, and here I was going back to L.A. without a job, and as I said, with a newborn baby, and I'm like, oh,
right.
Well, let's pray that something happens and I do get a job in L.A. So I did. I went back to L.A. and I told my daughter. I said, I just want you to know that this happened, and I want you to know because I promised you that I wanted to keep that promise. But I also told her, I said, I can't make that promise always. My business is such that I could get a job that I'm going to be working in Miami for 5 years, or in Chicago, or in Hawaii, or in Vancouver. That's the way it is. I said, but I did make that promise to you, and that was important for me to keep that with you. And So she was very understanding of it and appreciative of it, but I thought it was important for her to know that. And it was 5 months later that Judy Wilson called me, and she said, what can we do to get you on the show? We really would like to have that character on. We'd like to have you on the show. And I said, I can't think of anything. I mean, my daughter's living here. And she said, what about Sydney, her mother, was my ex-wife. She was somebody who worked on Santa Barbara years ago, and she was running on the Restless for a few years. They said, would she be willing to come to New York if a show was available for her to do here? And I said, I don't know. I don't know if she's not working right now. She might be. And I talked to her, and she said, yeah, absolutely. And Judy called the other shows, to her credit, to like an amazing thing. She called the other daytime shows and let them know that Sydney was available if any role came up. And what happened was that there was a role that was available at that time. They were casting on Guiding Light a person to come in that was supposed to be Annie, or you didn't know if it was supposed to be Annie, the character was there. Cynthia Watchrose, I think, is the one who played it before. And they put her on tape in L.A. They liked her audition, so they flew her to New York to test, and she got the part.
How awesome is that?
Oh, my.
So all my children, I signed with all my children. I moved to New York. A month later, my daughter moved to New York, and she's still in New Jersey to this day because of that. She's 22 years old now. And she, at the time, was like, I don't know, maybe she was like, I don't know, it was 1997. So, you know, she was probably like 7 years old, 8 years old. When that happened, I guess. So it's pretty amazing. I feel like, you know, thanks to Judy Wilson, that was very creative of her to do that and make it work, and that everything fell into place. And I just felt like, you know, since I honored my promise with my daughter, I felt like, you know, almost like God knows heaven and earth to make this happen. And
it was almost like fate and a reward.
It was amazing that all these things came into play, and 13, 14 years later, I was still on the show, you know, so anyway, but, you know, back to your question, you asked me, how was it? That's interesting, because I deviated rather far from that.
No, I'm glad you shared that with us.
Oh,
that,
what a great story.
I love that story, yeah.
Yeah, it's a wonderful story. I love it. And this is another thing with Judy Wilson. This is really funny. Judy, when I did that stint for 3 months, okay, and then I turned down the contract after that. It was like the next week they were doing the Soap Opera Digest Awards in L.A. And I wasn't on the show anymore, and they invited me. They said, well, you're here. Why don't you come to the awards? So I went to the awards, and I sat right next to Judy Wilson. And we're watching the awards, and the category came up, and it said it was for Best Villain. And the person won, and they were on that. Judy leaned over to me. She goes, next year that's going to be you. And I'm like, what are you talking about? I said, what are you talking about? I'm not even on the show anymore. She goes, next year that's going to be you. I came back on the show 5 months later. A year later for that award, I won that award. And that was Judy Wilson that predicted that. I'm like, are you kidding me? Oh, my God. It was like, do you have any stock tips or what? It was crazy. But anyway, like I said, back to the question. What do I miss the most? I loved having steady work and developing a character. I love the characters that I've had the opportunity to create on these shows. And I love also the ensemble feeling. You really do. You get a sense that pretty much all of daytime is like one big repertory company. And it's exciting. You get to work with wonderful, wonderful actors. You get to work with crews. That you become like family. Everybody becomes family with one another. And, you know, so I'm very grateful for all the years that I've had in daytime, and especially the fans. I mean, the fans have been amazing and so supportive to all of us for all these years. And, you know, they can't express their gratitude, appreciation for this medium and for the actors that are in it more. It's impossible. And I think that they're really one of a kind. So I'm grateful for all of them.
And, you know, that's so true. We really, honestly can't thank you enough for being part of our families for so many years either.
Mm-hmm.
And
Definitely.
That's what makes it so hard when the soap gets canceled that you've watched for 30 years or however long. Even I know some people that have watched All My Children maybe the last year or two that it was on, and still feel, you know, so sad that it's gone because they've invested their time into it. And thank God for
it really
you too,
like
where you can watch
it. Yeah, it really does feel like there's a hole in their lives after so many years, decades of having that time set aside every day to watch their shows, their stories. And it's a shame. It really is a shame. especially with something as special as All My Children and One Life to Live. They both were very special shows, and you know, and Guiding Light too. I've been saying this for a while now. Look at the legacy that we've left behind with these shows.
Mm-hmm.
How many mediums in this industry produce a product that has a lifespan of 72 years, like Guiding Light, you know, or 40 plus years with All My Children and General Hospital, which I think is coming up on their 50th, perhaps, I think, or something like that.
Yeah,
You know, all of these shows that, just think of the countless millions of people who have been entertained, the hundreds of thousands who have been employed as a result of these shows throughout the years.
Yeah.
You know, it's pretty amazing. It's an incredible industry that was spearheaded many years ago that with people like Agnes Nixon. You know, she was one of the founders of it. She, you know, a handful of people that set the foundations in place so that it would have a lifespan as long as it has. And I just feel really honored to have been part of it. It's been a privilege and to work with people like Agnes Nixon. So.
Yeah, I know that so many, not just the actors were affected, not just the fans, of course, but also so many people behind the scenes that made all of this possible, and our hearts went out to each and every one of them as well.
Yeah, I have to even think about the impact that it has on the community where these shows were, like the one in New York, where One Life to Live and All My Children were. You know, like I said, that they were part of the New York community for 40 years. So I would have to say even the stores and the restaurants in those communities have been affected by all those people that are no longer there. And obviously the crews that worked in this medium in that city for so long that they're looking for work like everybody else, and it's just the work is just not as readily available, you know. So it's tough. It's been a really tough 2 years, 3 years for many, many people. So that's hard, you know, during a difficult time, even with our economy. So
now we have Brassy Lady, who is Nadine. She's in the chat room, and she said, "Why is there a decline in soap production? What do you think about that?"
Why is there a decline in soap production? I would have to say that I think that the networks would claim that it has everything to do with economics. You know, even that we moved to Los Angeles when we did. Because they were saying that producing the show in New York had become cost prohibitive, that it was not that they couldn't do it. That the press sad part, the thing that jilted us most at the time was that we really were given the impression that it was going to go for at least 5 years. They were going to give us at least 5 years to see what we could do with it, and that's why it was such a big shock when it happened.
Right.
But, you know, so I would have to say that's it. I mean, everybody has their theories. There's, you know, people talk about reality television having an impact, and it certainly has had an impact, especially where the networks are concerned. You know, it's not just daytime, even nighttime is struggling. You know, the numbers aren't what they were 15, 20 years ago in any of these mediums. But you can't escape the fact that there's so much more product out there than there was years ago. So in some ways, it's like even though there's a lot of reality television, if you look at basic cable or even premium cable, those networks are producing original programming now. You know, you have FX and you have AMC and you have USA and you have, you know, Lifetime. You have all of these things that are doing wonderful, wonderful dramatic series. I mean, like Mad Men, you know, or Boardwalk Empire. It's like these are two of my favorites right now. I love them. You know, they're great shows. And but they're always, it's like Breaking Bad has been an amazing series. And these are all original programming, so that even though reality programming has come in and has in some ways eclipsed dramatic programming on the networks, it hasn't done it. It's gone into other places, other venues. And that's what I'm grateful for. At least there's still product out there. So, but where daytime is concerned, I still think there's room for it, and I hope that it holds on and that it is able to, you know, find a cost-effective way to keep it going. You know, that's all.
Yeah,
well, you know,
and the Nielsen ratings are antiquated too, so they have to come up with something better than that.
that's true.
Yeah, and other people plan that too, and you may very well be right about that. I don't have all the inside scoop on that.
Right,
you know, I mean, I know that they're saying that people aren't, they're not measuring any longer. They're not really measuring the DVRs and everything like that. But my question about the DVRs is, as great as they are for the consumer, you know, that you can watch them whenever you want, I don't know if they measure those, does that really translate for the networks into dollars to produce them? Because basically, if you're telling a marketer, somebody or somebody who's selling a product, well, this show has these numbers on DVRs, you're basically telling them that those commercials that you're producing aren't being seen. So they're not. How many people are DVRing them and sitting there watching the commercials? It's not happening.
Nobody.
Nobody.
Yeah.
Right. So it really doesn't serve the purpose for them to raise the money to produce the programs, you know. So I don't know, but I don't have the answers to that. That's an area that I don't have enough knowledge of that I would want to make a prediction about, you know, what's the best way to handle it. I have no idea.
Right. Well, I did notice something, though, that with All My Children and with Young and the Restless and several movies that I've watched you in, you're usually playing the bad guy that everybody loves to hate but can't, because then we see the sensitive side to you and what's causing you to be the bad guy. What do you think about being cast like that all the time? Is it more fun to play that?
Well, I as I said, I feel very fortunate to have the opportunity to play the characters that I've played. You know, I don't always see them. I don't see them as black and white villains. I don't see them as that. I try to find the humanity in any character that I perform, that I create. Again, though, you are at the mercy of what's being written for you. And there have certainly been times, even with David, that there were periods with some of the writing that was like going for like a stretch of time here and there, where it started to deviate from the multifaceted, complex character to become a one-dimensional villain. And I was constantly going to the producer and saying at the time, saying, you know, what's going on here? This is, you know, that becomes annoying after a while. Mm-hmm. It's not a fun thing to watch. We need to see the multi-layers there. You need to know that the characters themselves, they don't see themselves as villains. They see themselves, they have a mission, or whatever the case may be, where David's mission was that he was holding a mirror up to the hypocrites of Pine Valley, you know, the not-so-good people of Pine Valley. And letting them know that they were no better than he was. You know, that's what he felt. It's like they were all a bunch of hypocrites, that they patted each other on the back, exalted each other as being these pillars of society, and but they would do anything they and had. I mean, even somebody like, you know, Jesse was, you know, planted drugs in my house, you know. You know, the things that they've done that people that they, with each other, they'd have compassion for each other and be supportive of one another. But if it was me, it was like, oh, they're terrible. This horrible person in our society needs to be like put on a stake and crucified and burned.
And I think that's why we always felt sorry for you, and we couldn't be mad at you when you did something back to him.
No, that's true. But I love characters like that. I love being able to play characters like that. Even in the movie that I just did for Lifetime, you know, I don't see the guy as a villain. And I don't know if you got the chance to see it, Left to Die.
Yes, I did.
Yeah, with Barbara Hershey and with Rachel Lee Cook. And I loved playing that person. I mean, first of all, it's a real person. This happened to this man. And, you know, people, it's interesting because it definitely has inspired a lot of emotion from people seeing it. And people felt, you know, oh, my gosh, another basically a scumbag. This guy was a real jerk to do this. But honestly, it's an interesting thing because the mother and the daughter, Tammy and Sandra Chase, they actually have a great deal of compassion for the man. When you speak to them, they don't see him in that way, and I didn't either. I had a great deal of compassion for him, too, for a number of reasons. People keep asking me, and I think it's important, they were asking all over Facebook and asking Twitter, you know, did the man have anything to do with them being arrested in the beginning? And Tammy and Sandra both are adamant that he did not, that he was as much a victim of this as she was, that they were both set up. And Sandra, I spoke to her the day of the screening 2 weeks ago, and she said that when she got out, she spoke to immigration officers in the United States, and she asked them, she said, if you would put somebody off the line, how long would it take for you to find drugs on them, whether it's in their, obviously it was in their suitcases or what they claimed, how long would it take? And they said it would take a minute with dogs and also just searching, take a minute. And she said, this is why she knows he had nothing to do with this, because when they pulled him off the line and they brought him into the room, they brought in their suitcases, and they stripped those suitcases right in front of them, right down to the lining. They opened up the lining and everything. Nothing was found. They then separated them, and she didn't see him again for 6 months after that. They separated them, and 6 hours later, they pulled her back into a room with her bags there. They opened it up, and just magically, the drugs were there. So she said it was obviously planted. There was no question that it was planted on her. So she felt that he had nothing to do with it. Obviously, I see this man as the tragic figure in that story. I do.
Right.
And it was terrible. I mean, but the reason why I have compassion for him, and this is what I even had long talks with Tammy about during the filming of it, that who's to know what horrors this man was going through in this male prison in a third world country where he didn't even speak the language. I wouldn't want to even think how bad it must have been for him when he first got in that place. And here, her mother, this is the way I feel about it, her mother at least had her daughter fighting for her on the outside. She was vigilant.
Yeah, and you
she
never saw anybody fighting for him.
No, there was nobody, because he was actually an Italian citizen. He wasn't American. And the Italian government just basically ignored him. They assumed, just like the United States embassy did with her, that she was guilty, even though she wasn't. The daughter was the one that was tenacious and standing up to the United States government and the Ecuadorian government to make sure that justice was served and her innocent mother was released. But nobody was doing that for him. He had nobody fighting for him, okay?
That's so sad.
And it was sad. And, you know, but that's what the real tragedy is of this, that because of the extreme conditions that this man was living in, that he had lost sight of himself and his process, and he lost his own identity, and for his need for survival had basically allowed himself to degenerate as a person to the point where he took advantage of the situation and took money that was not his from this woman who was also suffering. And it just it was really there, the contrast between the heroism of both Tammy and Sandra and this man who didn't have the strength to stand up under this, you know?
Right.
So that's really
I remember
what it was
for. when she walked in and saw him, and she says, "This what $30,000 buys you?"
Right. And, you know, but there's more to it than that also in that.
Yeah.
But it wasn't just him buying comfort.
Right.
You have to know that he was also buying his protection there. You have to know that he was probably paying off the warden and other people there to protect him from what before he had no protection at all. So, but the real tragedy of this is that at the end of the day, I mean, people ask me, did he ever get out? He did get out, like 2 years later after Sandra. He was released. But when 60 Minutes went to Ecuador to interview Sandra, they also went to interview him, and Mike Wallace met him and decided not to interview him because he felt that he was losing his mind. Between the experience and then all of a sudden he was just anesthetizing himself with drugs at the time, and he was not coherent. He was just not somebody that he felt would serve their purpose well.
That's sad.
So to get them out. He was released 2 years later. They don't know whatever happened to him. He's probably in Italy right now, but they feel that he really did kind of lose his mind from the whole experience. And that's really tragic. This innocent man that was part of this, people ask, well, why do you think, who set them up and why did they do it? Well, the reality is this, that if you're in a country where there's some kind of a cartel, all it takes is one person in Interpol to be corrupted and to be paid off. That if there's any news that there is going to be a shipment going through the immigration that day, and it's from the cartel, all they do is pay off somebody to as a subterfuge, as a diversion, to pull somebody else off the line and plant drugs on them to make it seem like that was the shipment that was going through, so the other one goes through.
So the other one goes through.
That's what happened in this situation, and it was terrible because Sandra had never even left the country before.
it was something that
she was convinced to do by her daughter, and you know, but Tammy's an amazing woman, and so is her mother. She really is, and it was an incredible character to play, and I just have a lot of passion, and as I said, compassion for this man as well, for what he went through. So.
Now, I also read that it affected you a lot by playing this part because you were in an actual prison there, and I didn't realize that when I watched the movie.
Yeah, it really served the scenes very well. being in there and, you know, getting a sense of what life would be like in there. And the whole experience was amazing. I loved being down there in Colombia. We shot at Bogota, Colombia, and the people, the crew that were down there, they were all so wonderful. And it was a unique experience to have that opportunity to go down there for 3.5 weeks and shoot that. It was very exciting. I loved it. I loved it. I loved every moment of it. I loved working with Barbara. She's a consummate professional.
She's an amazing brilliant actress.
As an actor. Mm-hmm. You know, she certainly has a legacy of wonderful roles that she's performed and accolades. And I just, it was an honor to work with somebody like that, of that caliber.
Now, I also read, too, that when you were there, you would go doing the touristy things, and that you went to the Botero Museum, and you saw some paintings from Fernando Botero, and that you already knew about him from an All My Children wardrobe designer. I thought that was the neatest thing to read.
Yeah, it was like it's one of our wardrobe designers. That was his favorite artist, and he had his paintings, like posters of his paintings on his walls, and that's where I was first introduced to Botero. And the funny thing was that I would see it, and it was like, okay, they were nice and everything, but I didn't, like, get it, that it was like, this is something that was, I'd be like, wow, this is my favorite artist. I liked it. It was fun. It was sort of caricature-ish a bit, and they were sort of celebrating girth, would you say? Or, you know, I don't know. But like very large women, nude women, but very large. And it was like, okay, it was nice, you know.
Yeah.
But when I went there to the museum, and to see a collection of his work, almost like a retrospective from room to room to room of his paintings, and also his sculptures, which were also very exciting, his bronze sculptures, and to see this, his work, a large body of his work, I got it. I was so tickled by it. I was I walked out of it feeling so good and so happy. It was like, oh, what a great, the guy, it's all with a sense of humor, and it's just beautiful, and I loved it. And then also at the museum, he had his own collection of paintings as well, like his Monets and Picassos and Renoirs. And so it was a really special museum. It was just sort of a small little boutique museum in a kind of a mansion in town in Bogota. It was just beautiful. And also the other one that I saw that I loved was the Museum of Gold in South America, the whole history of the gold of South America. And that was really special as well. I mean, the pieces that they had, the gold pieces dating, 500, 800, 1,200 years, they were beautiful. And what really struck me the most about this was that their history of gold of this was dating back to like 2000 BC, which it was exactly the same time that technology was being implemented in the Far East and places like Babylon and Assyria. And they didn't bring this up in the museum, but I know that from my studies of history. And that was what really deemed a country as a superpower at that time, if you had the knowledge of metallurgy, because it was through that you can melt down weapons and make chariots, and you could sell your products as well for agrarian societies and their tools that they use. So that was really sort of like today, nuclear power was their metallurgy at the time. But the thing that amazed me the most was that the same technology, the same science was being implemented on two totally opposite sides of the globe at the exact same time, during a time when nobody on either side of the globe even knew the other side existed. There was no communication between these two continents, but it was happening. It was sort of like a collective consciousness that was taking place at that time, that this science was being used. And that fascinates me more than anything. But that's an aside, but that's just me. So anyway.
Yeah. No, I like learning about history things too, like that. I know I didn't enjoy it when I was in high school, when you have to take it, but you grow more
as an
adult.
Oh, I loved it. That was one of my favorite subjects. That was one of my favorite subjects was history back then.
Yeah.
So.
Well, without history, we can have no, we can know nothing about the past. So
that's
history
true.
Is, always a great precursor to the future, and we have to have it. So it's necessary.
Now, there's an old saying, there's a saying by a 17th century, I think, German philosopher Hegel, or 18th century, who said, the one thing mankind learns from history is that we learn nothing from history. That's it. So, unfortunately, we repeat the same mistakes over and over again. And if you look at every superpower throughout history, for the most part, they were not destroyed from a power from without. They were usually destroyed from their actions within. It's self-indulgences and the corruption of society. It's like these mores that just values that sort of like disappear, and it's like that's what happens. So it's an interesting thing. But again, we're deviating. So I'm sure people that are listening are talking about now. Now we're getting a history lesson here. I don't know.
Oh,
yeah,
great.
We're enjoying it.
Yes, very much so. Vincent, I want to personally tell you, I fell in love with you as an actor when you came on board Guiding Light. I was a diehard Guiding Light fan and loved what the writers did with that storyline with Beth and Lou Jack and how they grew it and it just unfolded into this great love story. Because I think for the typical Guiding Light viewer, you know, everyone always kind of pitted, you know, Beth and Philip together, Philip and Beth, that was the love story. So it was so great for the writers to take that leap and to, you know, to pull you in. And, you know, it was a great way to, as far as introducing you to me as a viewer, it was a great way to kind of create a dynamic there that the Guiding Light viewers had not seen. And how was that like, what was it like for you playing that role? Because it was, gosh, you just evolved, you know, as time went on.
Yeah. First of all, it was my first foray into daytime television. And that was another short-term role. That was a three-day job. I was working at Joe Allen's in New York City. I just started as a waiter there. It was like, I went and auditioned that afternoon for the show. And it was, like I said, it was only going to be for 3 days' work. And I read for a woman named Betty Ray, who was amazing. I loved reading with her. I actually even improvised, and she went with me in the audition with the improvisation. I just went off script, and we just had a great time. And then she was like, wait here for a minute. She went inside and got Gail Colby, who was the executive producer, and she brought her in and said, let's do that again, and we did it. And I went to work. I went back to Joe Allen's after that, and I was starting my first day with my own station as a waiter, as I had trailed for a few days. And right before my shift started, the bartender picked up the phone, and it was for me, and said, you had a call. I said, I got it, and it was my agent, and said, you got the part. They want you. I'm like, oh, that's wonderful. That's great. And I told everybody at work, I said, well, are you going to quit? What are you doing? I said, no, it's only 3 days' work. I'm like, quit. It's something still here. So I did the 3 days, and it was the same thing. I got another 3 days' work, and they saw potential in the character, and they gave me a contract. And for me, it changed my life, and it even has an impact even today, and all these years later, that all the daytime shows that I've gotten ever since that was the first and last audition that I've ever had in daytime, thankfully. Every job that has come to me since then, from Santa Barbara to Young and the Restless, as well as all my children, were offered to me, which was great. I mean, those were amazing jobs, all of them. And so I was grateful for that, and it really was as a result of that character. That character was sort of foundational in my career. And I loved it. I loved playing Lou Jack. I loved the same thing. There was a complexity about him. He was a real wonderful anti-hero, and I loved working with the people I worked with. They really did a great job also writing him. So that was exciting. The other part to it is that working in that medium, it's funny because you bring about Beth and Philip. I have a call coming, that's why it's probably going in and out a little bit, but that should be over in a minute. Beth and Philip, when I first started, I would literally have people on the streets of New York that would come up to me when I'm like standing at a red light, and they'd start reprimanding me and telling me, you know, stay away from Beth, she belongs with Philip. And I'd be like, oh my gosh, these people, they're not like differentiating from reality to fiction.
Right.
And it was, for me, it was like a new thing. I had only been doing theater for years, and people were like attacking me on the street because of playing Paul McCartney on an off-Broadway show, or doing Indian Wants the Bronx at 13th Street Theater or something like that. You know, it was like nobody was doing that. So it was strange that people would be so passionate about it, but it really, they developed it so well that within a few months, the character that the people, audience, started really taking to Lou Jack and starting to champion him in that relationship with Beth. And then once we had our, you know, beach, outing out there, riding our golden Palomino on the beach, and, had our moment
with
the song of Almost Paradise, and people just loved the character together.
Oh, I know.
you know.
I know.
And
I remember.
Yeah, that they saw that the girl next door was able to be with the little gang leader kid, punk kid that was lost, you know,
well,
that she would help him.
The thing that I loved about you in that role was that you made it so believable because, like I said, for so long, we had, you know, Guiding Light viewers had loved the whole concept of Philip and Beth. But when you came along, you really made a believer out of the viewers. And, you know, and I had been diehard Philip and Beth, but all of a sudden it was like, you know, I like this Blue Jack guy. he's really doing something for her. You know, the character you played, I mean, it brought a different side of Beth out in that character that the viewers had not seen, that I think was great because it added a new dimension to Beth in terms of who she was as a character. So it really, it was just a great storyline all the way around. And yes, the Almost Paradise, I think, was what sold a lot of people because that was a very big song at that time, Loverboy, and it was just, you know, but it is, but I'm so thankful that you didn't stand firm and hold your ground and say that you were going to continue being a waiter because, my gosh, you know.
Once
I think you made the right choice.
Once they gave me a contract, I kissed that job goodbye, and I was happy to do so. I had been doing it for years from one restaurant to the next in New York City. I was, you know, people would ask me what I was doing for a living. I said, well, I'm waiting to get the hell out of waiting. That's what I'm doing. That's what I was at the time. And I was actually even more colorful in the way I said it than I did just now. But I've been doing it for years. And, you know, even when I was in college, I was working in restaurants in Boston. And, you know, but it's funny because after working in the service industry like that, the first years that I was doing it, I started having a hard time. I started not liking people. It was tough because people can come in and be so arrogant sometimes and so, like, pushy and so, like, I don't know. It was just a very hard thing. And it's funny because I've talked to other kids that are today, like kids that I know and teenagers or early 20s that are working in service, and they go through the same. They're going through the same exact thing that I was going through back then as well.
Right.
I can't say that it's universal, but there are moments that you're dealing with people sometimes that are really like hostile or arrogant, or or that you you work hard and then they leave you a penny or something like that, and they have no qualms to do that. That's why I always try to make sure that I tip well when I'm with places, because I want to be sensitive to the fact that these are people that are working hard. You know.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because I've been there, you know, from whence I came. So. That's all.
I did it for 30 years. I waitressed and bartended, so I know exactly what you're talking about. And you still have to put a smile on your face no matter how rude somebody is being to you for something that's not even your fault.
I know.
I wanted to slip in real quick. I got an email from a girl. Her name is Katrin, and she's from Germany, and she couldn't listen to the show. Do you know who she is? Mm-hmm.
Of course, yeah. She actually flew in from Germany to see a show at BB King's. And she's come in a few times before for other events that we've done. She's also a very big fan of Bobby's as well, and Bobby Eakes. And she's just a dear, dear woman. I adore her. She's a sweetheart. And I felt so bad because here she was in New York, and now she made the plans like a week before, so you know that she paid a lot of money to fly here. And then she got stuck because of the hurricane.
Oh my gosh. Well, she wanted to say thank you for being so kind to the fans, and that she just absolutely loves your music and photography projects. But she wants to also know when you're going to, or if you would consider getting an album out. I know more than she would just like that. We would all love to hear that.
You know, I don't know. I've thought of that. I know that she was, people were recommending, because Bobby and I did a duet together at BB King's. And it was Jason Aldean, Kelly Clarkson's song, Don't You Want to Stay? We did that. And it went really well. It was fun. And people were asking if we would record something together. And, you know, you never know. I never say never. Anything is possible.
Okay.
And we'll see. But at the moment, I don't think it's going to happen next week if it happens. So,
right.
You know. It'll take a little planning, and we'll see what happens. So.
Also, there, Barbara from our chat room wanted to make sure that we wish you a happy birthday from yesterday, right?
Yes, it was yesterday. Yesterday was my birthday, and it was a great day. And I woke up and, like, I'm going to have a special day today, and it was a very special day. So, but thank you, Barbara. Thank you, everybody. I got to tell you, I was, and I even wrote this on Facebook. I was overwhelmed. I had thousands of birthday wishes from people all over the place, and they were coming from all sides. They were coming like from 8 different places on 2 Facebook pages and on Twitter, and they're coming from all sides. Oh my gosh! And I think I read every one. I think I did. I hope I did. I was trying to. I was like going everywhere where I was, even on like places with my phone. I was reading through them because I wanted to like at least honor the fact that people did it. And I had to put out a blanket message to people saying it because there's no way I could respond to everybody individually. But I am very grateful, and I was just very moved. It's just very sweet. People are wonderful, and you know. So I
everybody
think so
loves
nice,
you.
There's so much nicer to me than when I was a waiter, and I'm so grateful for that. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah. Well, as much as I would love to continue this conversation, we do have a bunch of calls on hold, so I think we better start picking some of those up if you don't mind.
Sure. No, absolutely. Okay. Let's do that. That would be great.
Okay, thank you. The first one is going to be Tricia from Maryland. Tricia, go ahead and say hello to Vincent.
Hi, Vincent. How are you?
I'm very well, Tricia. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. It's so nice to talk to you.
Is this Tricia Dunn?
Yes, it is. Yes.
Oh, my gosh, you got in first? How'd you do that, Tricia?
I got in
fast as
I could. I couldn't wait to talk to you. It's so nice to talk to you again. I wanted to ask
you. How's your sister, Ellen?
Oh, she's doing real well. She says hi. She's sitting here with me. Say hi, Ellen.
Hi, Vincent.
Oh, she's sitting there with me. She's excited, too. I wanted to ask you, when you work in movies versus, like, All My Children or other soaps that you've been in, what is, like, the one thing in either one that you like both about one? Like, you'll go to, a soap, and you'll say, well, in movies, they do this. Or if you're, like, in a soap opera, you'll say, well, in soap operas, they do this. I like that better. Is there anything you've ever found like that?
Well, yeah, honestly, they're different disciplines, you know. The production demands are very different. And, you know, I'll say the first, with daytime, what I do love about daytime is that you get to do a large amount of material in one day. You're doing going from one scene to the next, oftentimes if you're working in the same set, let's say you have 5 scenes in one set, you're doing one scene right after to the next one. You're doing it as one long scene oftentimes. With just a short break in between, and you get a sense of consistency and flow, and they're shooting all the cameras simultaneously, so you're not worrying about having to do different takes and different camera shots. So you're doing it straight through, and it's great because you do get a sense of an emotional thread that goes through it from moment to moment, whereas when you're working in film, you're oftentimes working with either one camera, sometimes 2 cameras simultaneously. But you're doing scenes over and over again in different takes and different camera shots and different camera angles. You could do one scene. If you're doing a nighttime TV show, one scene could take 3 hours to do.
Wow.
And it's all different takes. And the thing that's hard about with film, and it's a perfect example of some of the things that I've been doing lately in film, like even Worth that just came out on DVD yesterday by a Walmart. So I'm putting a
photo. Yeah, I got mine ordered. I can't wait to see
good.
It.
Oh, good. That's great. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I ordered my copy yesterday. I can't wait. I'm so looking forward to it.
Yeah.
And Left to Die. Oh, me and Ellen just loved it. Oh, it was so
thank
cool.
Thank you.
It was so emotional.
Such a powerful story. And,
oh, you're
anyway,
wonderful.
But the thing about them, thank you. But the thing about those is that once my performance is done, it's really at the mercy of the editing process. And, you know, there are definitely moments that in any film that I've ever done that I know there was something there that the audience never got to see because they were on another person or they choose a wide shot and you didn't see what was going on there. So you see that and it's just, you got to let it go. It is what it is. But I love it. I love, like, both the films that I've had the opportunity to do this summer, Worth and Left to Die. I love that process as well. I do. It's exciting. And, you know, and to see the production values and quality that you're able to get from these films as well is also exciting. And Worth is, you talked to me about playing a villain, that I play a villain a lot, and Worth is not really a villain in this. There was something that took place in his life 10 years earlier that was tragic and that he was responsible for. But he has spent 10 years since then trying to, to correct that and help others to make sure it didn't happen. So he's not a villain in any way, but it's a great role. It was an exciting role to do.
I can't wait to see it. Oh, I know it's going to be
wonderful.
Well, we hope you have many, many more movies and television and everything to come. You're a wonderful actor, and as always, you're a wonderful singer. We were so sorry we didn't get to see you in New York. Oh, we were so sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry, too. I'm sorry, too. But, I really my heart goes out to everybody in the Northeast that they've gone through
what they've gone through.
And it's terrible. I mean, waking up the next day after the hurricane, and I was in New Jersey with my kids. I was happy to be there, to be able to be there at that time with them. We didn't lose power. And just four houses away from us, where they were at the next corner, the houses had no power for a week.
Wow.
So we were fortunate where we were that we didn't lose power. But to be able to see them after the devastation that took place in New Jersey,
that was awful.
On Long Island and New York, it was. And have dear friends of ours who their house in Rockaway, it's like a block from the beach, where they their house was the basement was filled with water to the ceiling, and they're being told that they won't have heat until February because they have to replace everything in that basement. That's like the boiler, the thing, and they're one of hundreds of people that have to go through that. So
my
heart goes out to them. So.
Right. Well, we just love you so much, and we're so glad we got the chance to talk to you again. And
thank you, Trish, and thank you for being so tenacious to get out there first and pushing everybody out of the way to get online.
I tried my best. I had a doctor's appointment, and I kept saying, "Hurry up! I gotta go." you're just so talented, and we just love you to death, and we hope to see you on TV again soon. Oh, I also wanted to tell you, Lion Eyes is on LMN tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock Eastern time. Another one of your great movies is out there, too.
Thank you, honey. Thank you. That movie, I think, has probably been aired more than any other movie I've ever done.
I think they are, but it's funny because I always watch it. I watch it like it's a brand new movie, but I still have a DVR.
I'm hoping someday that they re-air Lucky Chances. That's a 6-hour miniseries that I started
Sunday years ago.
And Jackie Collins, and I love Jackie, and I just loved working on that role. And it's actually, I played opposite Sandra Bullock in that. She was my wife.
I know you did.
That first
I love
part
Lucky
of that. And that was before she was the big famous Sandra Bullock, but she was wonderful and extremely talented back then. And it didn't surprise me at all that she became what she became. She's incredibly talented.
Oh, well, I hope they re-air that too. You're wonderful in everything you do, and also your Glass Magazine articles are wonderful. I just read the one that you read on Don; it was beautiful.
Thank you.
Well, you take care.
All right, honey.
Thank you for calling.
Thank you, Vincent. Nice talking to you. Take care.
Bye.
Bye.
All right. The next call on hold. This is Enrique. Enrique, go ahead. You're on with Vincent.
Hi. I'm 21, and I only know you as David Hayward, but thanks to you two, I was able to check you out as Lujic and as Nick, and you're awesome every role you ever played.
Oh, thank you. That's sweet. Thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah, it's interesting that because of YouTube, people every once in a while send me on Facebook others or Twitter scenes that I did 25 years ago, and I don't even remember them. I was like, wow, it's a good scene. It was fun. I don't remember all of them. It's funny. But, that's an interesting thing that we have with YouTube now. Well, thank you, Enrique. That's great.
Yeah. So my question is, would you ever consider appearing on GH since Anna is there, your ex-wife?
Mm-hmm. Certainly I would consider doing it. I don't know if I fit into the show with them right now. That's entirely up to them, obviously. And, if that's the case at some point, if they feel that would serve their purposes for the show, then I'm sure they'll be in touch with me. There have been moments where people with ABC have been talking to people, my representatives, but at the time it just didn't seem like the right time. If that was the case, it was going to happen. So I'm certainly open to it. And in the meantime, I'm doing other things. And, if they came to me and I was available, then I'd be available. But I would love to work with Fennell again. I think she's an extraordinarily talented actress. And I thought that we had a great dynamic together as David and Anna. I think it's a great show, and anything that I could do also to be a part of helping to keep this medium going. And, I love it. I have a great sense of loyalty to the medium. I think it's an amazing medium, and I'm grateful to have been a part of it. So, whatever small part I can have in that, I would be happy to be a part of it. So.
Yeah. So I need to head to class right now, so I'll let you go now.
Okay. You go ahead. Do well in class.
Yeah. Okay. Bye.
Right. Bye. Bye now.
Thank you, Enrique. Bye. All right. Next up, we have David calling. David, you're on the line with Vincent.
Hey, Vincent.
Hi. Hi, David. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. This is a pleasure to meet you. I followed you from Lou Jack all the way to David Hayward, and I love every single one of you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Well, that's great. Well, that's a long time following. That's awesome. I appreciate it, David. Where do you live, David?
I'm in New York, west of Albany.
West of Albany. Okay. Okay. Yeah, I was actually west of Albany. We were in communication at one point with a venue in Clarence, New York, which is close to Buffalo, about the possibility of doing the cabaret there. And I don't know, I believe they were giving us dates, we were selecting dates, and then, I don't know, something sort of like disappeared. I don't know what happened to it. But it may be resurrected again. I'm not sure what's going to happen, but we might be close to you. I'm not sure. So at some point, we'll see if it happens.
Let's see. Oh, my question was, to you, you had the chance to play opposite one of the grandest divas in daytime, and that was Beverly McKenzie. What is your fondest memories of her?
Oh, Beverly. Oh, man, I love Beverly. I just love her. She was an amazing woman, an extraordinary talent, and the consummate professional. I learned so much from her about professionalism. I was a young actor at the time, and I just saw how she just, came to work, with knowing everything, her lines, backwards, inside and out. And, she was always there for the production as well as just for the actors, and just always doing a brilliant job. And, she was just, she was a ballsy woman. Beverly and I, she would sometimes say things that were a little off color at times, and but crack you up because of it coming from her. It just didn't look like she would be the one saying it, and she was very outspoken. We loved each other. I kind of felt like even when I first started working with her, it was like a few weeks later, where it was Mother's Day, and I brought her some flowers for Mother's Day, and she was just so moved by that. And, we had just started working together. And my character wouldn't even accept her as a mother on the show, but it's just that kind of a thing. We had a great, really, very great affection for one another and protectiveness over one another. And I adored her. And that's why even when I won my Emmy all those years later, I mentioned her in my speech, because she really did, help to fashion in me a really strong sense of professionalism. And I've had the great opportunity, privilege to work with people like her, and with Larry Gates was another one that I just adored. I loved Larry, who played H.B. Lewis on Guiding Light at the time. And even when I left the show, he and I would write letters to each other several years afterwards to keep in touch with each other. And he was just a sweet, sweet man who I had great respect for as a talent. And I feel grateful to have had the opportunity to work with people like Angela Lansbury, who is another one that I hold her up as another consummate professional that I got to work with. And that to work on that set of Murder, She Wrote, it was their eighth year in production, and everybody in that crew adored her. She was like the perfect example of the trickle-down effect, that if the star of the show is a professional and wonderful and gracious with the people that they work with, that it creates a harmonious atmosphere on the set, and that people love coming to work and be there for each other, and they bend over backwards to help each other. And that's exactly how I felt on that set with her. Everybody was like that, and they were wonderful to each other. And I've worked with other stars of nighttime shows that they're the complete opposite of that. And as a result, the crew are hostile to each other and to the other actors. People are, they're sort of backbiting. It's not a pleasant place to work because it's a trickle-down effect, as I said. And so I'm grateful to have worked with people like that, and I have those examples, to show that for myself also, when anything ever happens to me, to remember that, the people that you work with, that they're there doing the hardest work that they can do to make you look as good as you can possibly look, and you have every, you have a responsibility to show appreciation to them in every possible way, so I'm grateful for that. And that was Beverly. She's a wonderful person to know. So
thank you very much for talking to me. And thank you, mm-hmm. Dawn and Pam.
You're welcome,
David.
I was going to say as an aside to that also that you have also Scott McKenzie, who is a director and a wonderful, wonderful director in our medium daytime. Scott is her son, and I worked with Scott the first day that he ever directed was on Guiding Light. That Beverly brought him in and got him the opportunity to start trailing there, training as a director, and he started working there, and it was great to watch his career take off, and he became, you know, one of the top directors of our medium, and he's a sweet, sweet man, and hope I get the opportunity to work with him again someday. That would be great.
I hope so, too. Thank you again.
Sure.
Thanks, David. You have a good night.
You too.
Oh, that was
now,
David.
Our
hour
is up with you. I don't know if you wanted to take any more calls. Otherwise,
how many more people are there? Let me see.
There's 1, 2, 3, 4, about four more, I think.
We'll do four more then, because I don't want to. Why don't we do that? We'll do four more. I'll stand for a little while longer, and I'll try to be a little bit more concise. It's not an easy thing for me to do, so. Yeah,
thank you very much for that.
Thank
okay,
you.
We'll bring on Sharon. Sharon, say hello to Vincent.
Hi, Vincent. How are you?
I'm very well, Sharon. How are you doing?
Oh, my God. I'm so happy to speak to you. Oh, my God. I just got to tell you, I miss you so much.
Oh, thank you, honey. That's so sweet of you. Thank you. Thanks for watching all those years. Thank you.
Oh, my God. I've been watching – well, I was watching all my children since about 1983, and now they have the reruns, and I was just like you guys were talking. I had such a hole, you know, even though I have a job and I have a life. I mean, when you watch a show for 20-plus years and you get to know the characters, they almost feel like a TV family to you, you know? And,
absolutely. Yeah.
It just made me sick. So my aunt and I, we always talk. Is there a possibility that All My Children would ever come back? Because I know one of the shows that replaced All My Children, One Life to Live, which both of them we watched, tanked. is there any chance, do you think ever that All My Children could come back?
I don't know. I really can't answer that, honestly. I don't know if there's a chance or if there's even any possibility that something like that could happen. Because there's so many factors that would have to come together, and I don't even know, honestly, I don't even know who owns the rights to it at this point, to be honest with you. I don't know if Fox Tech still has a hold on it, or if ABC has it, if Agnes has some stake on it. I don't know. It would be wonderful. But at the very least, if we were able to do something that had some closure, because that was the worst ending that we had. Not only for the viewers, but also for us as the performers. It was just not the ending that we should have had, and it was sad. Yeah. That was the saddest part, and I know that that's how everybody feels, the audience, because we all just left hanging after 41 and a half years. That we just were left hanging.
Oh,
and
my God.
There should have been some closure to it. You know, I think that at least shows like, you know, Guiding Light had their ending, and As the World Turns, I would assume, had it. I didn't see it at the end, but I would have to believe that they did as well. And, you know, both our show and One Life to Live, we never had it. And maybe there's a reason for that. Maybe it will come back someday for that, for the very least, to do that. Who knows? I don't know. But it would be nice. It would be nice.
I'll be praying for it, because I got to tell you, I miss you and the cast, but you are one of my, you and Erica Kang, well, Susan Lucci, were my top two favorites. I mean, I just, when you came on to All My Children, I was like, oh, he's bad. I like him.
That says a lot about you, sweetie.
And I just love the character, and you're just such a wonderful actor. I hope I see you more on TV or movies or just please don't stop acting, because it would be a bad place.
Well, thank you, Sharon. It's very sweet. Where do you live, Sharon? I'm just out of curiosity. Not your address necessarily. I'm just where you where you're from. What town you live in? What part of the country do you live in?
I'm in Kansas City, Missouri, close to the airport actually. Yeah,
I teach up. Okay. Well, thank you so much for calling in, and thanks for watching.
And yes, thank you.
On to talk to me. I appreciate it. Take care.
All right.
All right.
Thank you, Sharon. Have a good night.
Okay, right. Next up, we're going to have Mary from Georgia.
Hi.
Mary.
Mary, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, hi, Mary. How you doing? Welcome.
I'm doing great, Vince. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you. I'm doing okay.
Well, first of all, I want to thank you because you sent me a picture for my last birthday.
Oh.
At the request of your sister, Audra.
Oh, really?
I'm a friend of Audra.
You're friends with my sister.
Yes, I'm a friend of hers, and she requested that you send me a picture for my last birthday in October, and you did. And it's hanging on the wall in my office.
She didn't request, she demanded it. She said, so she never talked to me again.
So you remember that?
No, I'm kidding. No, I do remember saying that, but she didn't demand it. She asked.
Yeah, it was belated. She said she scolded you for not getting it to me on time, so you sent the belated picture. But it's hanging proudly in my office at Summit Systems in Beaufort, Georgia.
Well, that's great. That's great. Well, I'm happy you got it, and I'm happy you're enjoying it, and I hope that you don't have a husband or a boyfriend who's thrown darts at it.
Well, I do have a husband, and he says, yeah, he walks into my office. He works at our company, too, and he walks in there, and he says, yeah, I see his picture hanging in the office, and mine's not in there.
Yours is in the drawer, you calendar.
Well, I have a smaller picture of him that sits on the desk, but yours hangs prominently on the wall. And I have so many people come in there. So many people come in and say, who's that guy?
Oh, that's funny. Well, if I was him, I would take that picture of myself and I would, being him, and I would bring it to the photo place and have it blown up to 8x10 size, and I would put it in your office. That's what I would be doing. But
yeah, so many people walk in, they say, how did you get that? I said, well, I'm special.
That's fine.
I did want to thank you for the picture, and I have followed your career for so many years. I followed you with Lou Jack and on into Young and the Restless and All My Children and all the movies you've ever done, and including the Clint Eastwood one, the Heartbreak Ridge.
I've
watched everything you've ever done, and I'm thoroughly enjoyed it. So.
Thank you. Well, and you can please give my baby sis a kiss for me.
I
just spoke to her today. She called me today. That's what we spoke about.
Friends with her for several years before I even knew that she was your sister. I was totally shocked when I found out. Yes, I knew that the name was the same, but it just never occurred to me to make the connection. And when I found out, I was totally astounded.
Especially when she was talking with a southern accent, right? Because she's been in Georgia for a long time.
True.
We tease her because she says things like fixin' and stuff like that. I said, where are you from, Long Island? Where did fixin' come in? I never heard that on Long Island. So.
Yeah, we rubbed off on her.
Yeah, that's true. So did you have a question, honey?
Well, I just, not really a question. I just had the comment that I just wanted to let you know how much we all love you here and how much
Thank
we all
you.
Miss you, and we just totally admire your work.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
I wanted to let you know how much we all cared about you here.
All right. I appreciate that. Well, again, I'm letting people know because it just came out yesterday in Walmart, the DVD for Worth, so anybody who wants to check that out, it's a fun movie. It's a very good movie. Jen Page directed it. She did an absolutely wonderful job. Loved working with her. And it was a great cast. And, it was exciting. So Eric Roberts is in, Corey Feldman, Jeffrey Johnson, she's wonderful in it. You may not know him, but he did a great job in the lead role in it. And I play a co-lead opposite him. And it's great. It's a really good role to see. So hope you get a chance
to
see it.
We're hungry for anything that you're in, so we definitely
that's the truth.
And my daughter Haley definitely wanted me to tell you that she wanted to say hi, and that she watched you right along with me. So she, of course, lot of times she said, "Why is he so mean? Why does he have to be so mean?"
I tell her that somebody has to stand up to those hypocrites in Pine Valley. That's all.
Right.
It's just the character he plays. He's not really that mean.
That's funny. Well, thank you for watching.
Well, I'll let you get to your other callers, Vince. I just wanted to let you know that we all love you and miss you.
Thanks, Mary.
Thank you.
Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye-bye.
All right. So now I have Nadine from Illinois. Nadine, go ahead and say hello to Vincent.
Hi, Vincent. This is Nadine. You and I met at Harvey at the autograph.
And
I told you about my girlfriend that had ovarian cancer and how you, your role as David Hayward helps informs us about health problems that we didn't know about and what to do. And you had told me about an article about with gold that would kill off the cancer. Well,
yes,
my,
right.
Yeah, well, you saved her life. She's going through those treatments. I found that article.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh.
Oh, wow.
Wow. That's fantastic. That's fantastic. I'm so happy to hear that. Yes, I remember that discussion that I had with you. It was when you came to see the play Harvey that Walt Willey produced and acted, starred in the play, the classic play Harvey. And they asked me to be a part of it with him in Ottawa, Illinois, which is his hometown. He produces a show there every year, and he asked me if I would do it. And happily, I said yes. And I went, and we had a great time, and I loved working the production. And that was the last performance, and we had an autograph signing afterwards at some local restaurant. And that's where you came in. I'm sorry, what was your name again?
Nate. You here asked me for my full name, Nadine Sage.
Right, Nadine. And Nadine, yes, you came up to me and started talking to me about my character, and I had just read that article, I think, that morning or the day before, and I found it fascinating that they were finding that gold flakes were being injected into the bloodstream through, and it was having some effect on localizing the cancer tumors so that it wasn't spreading throughout the body so that he could treat it. Through that, it's a new revolutionary, type of process, procedure for treating cancer. So your friend is doing this now, is that right?
Yeah, they're going to do it because the doctor said she couldn't go for any more radiant treatments. She's been fighting this for the last 9 years of her life.
Yeah, because that's exactly right, because the radiation, I'm remembering the article now little by little, but the radiation, it affects the whole body because it can't differentiate from where it's necessary for it to hit to ward off the cancer. So it affects the whole body, whereas because of the flakes that are in there, it's localizing it to the areas that are needed, and it's not having the sort of degenerative effect on the body as typical treatment is having. So that's amazing. So she's doing that right now,
they're going to start in about a month. They're trying to give her little rest, but she just finished this last bout of chemo. They said she had too much of the bad cancer floating around, and they can't keep doing this. So she would have to do it every 6 months. So because of you telling me that, I told her, and she got to talk to her doctor. I'm the one you helped with the Blue Walker.
Oh, okay, yes. Okay, I remember that. I do remember that. Okay.
Yeah.
All right,
Thank you for that, and thank you. You're always keeping us informed about yourself and about your fellow actors and actresses from All My Children, and everybody really appreciates that. And happy belated birthday.
Thank you, sweetie. Thank you. And please, and our hearts and prayers go out to your friend. And we pray for her recovery from all of this, and that it is successful for her. That's pretty amazing that's going on right now with her. So I think that's wonderful that she's getting a chance to try this treatment out, and I hope it works well for her.
Yeah, we'll see. You're still playing David Hayward, and you're not even on the air.
Right. I'm consulting with Dr. David Hayward, world-renowned cardiologist, even today.
Right.
but he's not Dr. Evil anymore. I told Rachel, the next time you get a permanent dressing room, she has to put Mr. Wonderful.
Yes, that's true. That's what I had to say. Rachel, my friend, dear friend, and also she's the administrator on all my websites, Rachel Anderson. She sent me a star for my dressing door with Dr. Evil on it, so I had it on there. It was great. It was fun to have it. Yeah, so we'll see. Maybe I'll have a chance to put that up somewhere else again someday. You never know. So, well, thank you, Nadine. Thanks for calling
in. Yes. You're welcome.
Thank you. Okay, now we'll go ahead and take Fern, and Fern will be the last call. Go ahead and say hello to
Fern from Queens. Is this Fern from Queens?
It is. How are you?
Oh. I'm well, Fern. How are you doing?
Good.
See, that's what I like know everyone that calls. I know everybody personally. That's
right.
How in touch I am.
Of course, I'm the last one.
The,
well,
the legions of fan.
I know. I hope you enjoyed your birthday yesterday.
I did. I had a great day. It was a beautiful day here in L.A. And it was just, I had a really nice day. It was nice.
Oh,
it was really nice. Thank you.
Oh,
and I actually danced with Fern at B.B. King's just a few weeks ago during Fly Me to the Moon. I went to the audience, and Fern showed us her moves, and she did better than I did. She made me look better than I really am.
I think you should be the next one on Dancing with the Stars.
We'll see about that.
Maybe.
We'll
you never know. I've seen many people from all my children have been on it, so I think you should.
Yeah, you never know. You never know.
It's
condition
time.
I think it will certainly, if I am on there, it would be entertaining, but maybe not for the reasons that most people might anticipate.
Oh, no, you did great. You did fine. But I wanted to call and just say how much I appreciate what you do for your fans and how you make us feel very special. And like you said, you know each one individually, and you make us just feel that way, that you really know us for our as individuals.
Well,
and
thank
that you take your time. And
you know, I think it's a unique, like I said before, it's a unique situation with the fans of this medium, because just as you have seen many of us in your living rooms day in, week in, and out, years on your television screen, we've also had you contact with many of you throughout all these years, you know, whether it's just through fan mail or through personal appearances and events that we've done, that we come to know you. And now, especially with the advent of Facebook and social media and Twitter and everything, there's greater access that all of us have to one another. And I get to know people through those venues as well, through those arenas. And it's a very unique situation because of, and it really does come down to the faithfulness of and the loyalty of fans from this medium that makes it, that's what makes it so rare. So that's why I have the opportunity to know people by name, like Fern and many others over the years, and or even have had, just like with Nadine, have the opportunity to speak with her at an event that I did, and you know, share something personal for her that has some a positive effect on a friend of hers, and that's wonderful. I mean, I don't know if that's like that in other mediums as much as it is with the daytime audience because of how much access we have to one another.
No, it's wonderful.
Yeah, well, I'm grateful too, and I'm happy to have had the opportunity to get to know as many people as I have all these years. I've met some such wonderful people throughout all these years, and I'm so grateful for that. And you know, there are people that have become friends over the years because of my work as an actor, and I'm grateful for that as well. You know, so Fern, thank you, honey. That's very sweet of you to call and say that.
I did want to say that to you, and I enjoyed the last show, even though I've been to many of your shows. The last one during the hurricane, that was fun, you know, and it was a combo. You sounded great, you know, your singing is wonderful. I hope to one day see you on Broadway. I know, I think you were on Broadway at one time with the Beatles tribute.
Well, it was actually off Broadway.
It
was off Broadway, but it was still an off Broadway theater. And it was and also at the Public Theater, which is also off Broadway. I did the play, The Death of Von Richthofen there. That was written and directed by a man named Jess Mackinoff, who was at the time in New York was like the wonder kid at the Public Theater. He did Henry IV Part One in the Park, and then he did his play, Death of Von Richthofen. But then he went off to become artistic director at La Jolla Playhouse, and he's been there for years. He developed Jersey Boys there, as well as Tommy the Musical. He did that and directed them. But that was his play there. So yeah, I have yet to be on Broadway, but hopefully someday that would be great. Yeah, I mean, I love singing that style of singing, of legitimate singing, as you know.
I know you do. Wonderful.
And I love it. So hopefully someday I will have that opportunity. That would be awesome.
And you know, if you're there, I'll be there too.
Well, thank you, Fern. Thank you. And I don't know if that dance was in lieu of a carriage ride that I owed you for a while, but I don't know.
I'm going to still hold you to that, I think.
That's right. We tried. It's funny. I may as well tell the story. A few years ago, I hosted a benefit, and that's something that I auctioned off, was a carriage ride in New York City. And over the years, there have been several times where I've contacted her to do it, and then it's been like a snowstorm or it's pouring rain.
We have never been able to go.
And I don't live there anymore, and it's like, and whenever I go back, I'm going there to see my kids for a few days. I'm not always going into New York City, you know, I'm in New Jersey. So the time will come, Fran. I promise you, we will have that happen.
We always have that connection, though, that carriage ride.
Yes,
Can I be the driver?
Yes. So we did. I auctioned off a lunch. We did do that one.
We did do the lunch.
Even
though you got a parking ticket that day.
Oh, no.
Right, I did. And I got a parking ticket on my birthday yesterday in Santa Monica.
Oh,
I got
no.
one on my birthday. Yeah, I did.
Stop doing that.
I know. Yeah. I was going for an audition, and I got a parking ticket, so I'm still on hold. I might get the job, so that'll
well,
pay
for it.
Well,
I hope you get the job at least.
Yeah.
Really.
All right. Well, thanks, Fern. Thanks for calling
right.
in.
You take care. I'll speak soon.
Thank you, Fern.
All right. Thank you. Take
Bye-bye.
Care. Bye-bye.
Well, before I let you go, I just wanted to share with you real quick. I went to the play Harvey to see you and Walt in it.
Oh.
And I have to say that when I was standing there after the play was over with, and I was towards the back of the people that were standing by the stage, and you looked at me and you said, "Hi, Pam, I'm so happy you can make it." And I'm standing next to Shannon, and I'm like kind of looking around, and she goes, "He's talking to you." And I'm like, "Me?" And I thought, how could you recognize me for such a little Avi that I have on Twitter? But I'm telling you, you blew me away that day.
Yeah, I think because I do. I see your face on there when I'm doing Twitter, and I see people's faces and stuff, and I think that's how I remember. So
yeah.
That's when I saw your face, yeah. So, and I'll say this too, though. I think you probably, I'm almost certain that you wrote on Twitter that you were going to be there too.
Yes.
So that's why, and I probably was communicating with you, so that's why I was looking for you when I saw your face. I saw that you were there, and I acknowledged that I saw you.
Well, I thank you from my heart and for this interview, because it means so much to everybody to keep in touch with all the actors that we've grown to love over the years, no matter what soap or movie or whatever TV show that we watched you on.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't thank you enough for doing this for us and staying overtime,
well, thank
too.
Thank you, Pam.
Yeah.
Thank you, Pam. This is great. Thank you. Dawn, I appreciate it. This was great. I had a lot of fun doing it, and I hope everybody that listened and called in that they enjoyed it as well. This was great.
Oh, they did. Believe me, a lot of people in the chat room.
Yeah.
No, that's great. Well, after this, I'm going to get ready. I'm going to go to a spin class, which is something I like to do, especially I've got to burn off the calories I put on during my birthday yesterday. So that's what I'm going to be doing.
You're entitled. Once a year at least. So we'd like to invite you back somewhere, you know, sometime next year and catch up with what you're doing at that time, because I'm sure you'll be doing a lot more jobs between now and then.
I'd be happy to do it. All right, Pam?
Great.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dawn. Thank you, Pam.
Thank you so much, everybody.
Thanks
Take
for
care.
Having me.
Have a good night.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
You too.
Okay. Well, that was really sweet of him to take some extra calls. I'm sorry to the callers that we didn't get to. Unfortunately, it just runs that way sometimes. And he was only going to stay for 60 minutes, but he was nice enough to stay over.
Was he gracious or what? I mean, that was phenomenal, Pam. Really phenomenal.
Thanks. I love listening to his stories. I could listen to him all day.
He has,
you know, even about
stories.
The history.
Yeah, I mean, he even makes history sound interesting. That
Can you imagine him as your teacher?
You know what? He would be a phenomenal teacher, and you know, and I just love. I'm like you. I loved listening to him. He has so you can just tell he's had. You know, they're indicative of his career and all the many experiences that he has had. Gosh, he has stories, endless stories to share, you know.
Yeah.
Never without anything to say and always interesting. So, gosh, what a great interview.
I loved it, and we'll be so happy to have him back, and I wish him
definitely
much success in his future, and I'm positive, I'm so positive that he will, you know, work forever, because he's so talented, and he can do so many different types of roles, and between films and TV and Broadway or off-Broadway, and even working with Walt in his plays, at singing, photography, I mean, it's endless possibilities for him.
Yes, definitely. I agree. And so, you know, we got that little added bonus tonight we weren't expecting. And that's always nice when you, you know, when you do these shows and you have the guests and they're giving of their time, you know, which is very, very, you know, reduced. They're so limited in the time they do have. And to say that they will come on a show, our show or any show, and give an interview, be it 30 minutes an hour, but then to go longer, you know, that really says a lot about the person. You know, and gosh, I'm just a little bit overwhelmed right now.
I know.
I mean, he's just such a nice guy. He's the kind of guy you just go have a nice glass of wine with and just sit and listen to him talk for, you know, hours on end about all the many things that he's done and the things he's seen, and you know, it's just, it was just great. So, and I'm with Pam on that. I, you know, for those of you who called and did not get to speak to him, we do deeply apologize. It's just we had, as you could tell, you know, he was enjoying talking to the callers, and it, each call was running a little longer than we had anticipated.
Right.
So we will make good on that when he is back next year. We'll get him back on. And the only thing I can say is when we announce that he's coming back, when you call in, just call in at the top of the show, get in the queue early, and, you know, we usually take the calls in order of when they come in, so to be
exactly
fair. So, you know, the earlier you call and the earlier you get in the queue, the better your chances are of actually getting to speak to him or any of our guests, really.
Yeah.
So, it's always a good rule of thumb, you know, about 10 minutes before showtime, if there's someone that you're a huge fan of, just call, get in the queue, and you know, and we will get to you as the calls come in. So, but we really like to try to take as many as we can. So we don't always get the luxury of a guest saying they will stay longer to take more calls, you know.
Right.
And that's extremely gracious. So that's something to always bear in mind when we have our guests on, because every guest is different, you know.
Yeah, we have to respect their time, because they're giving us
definitely
their time for just, you know, to, because they're wonderful people and they want to connect.
Yeah.
So. I also want to mention, too, that tomorrow we have, for any Twilight fans that are out there in Breaking Dawn, we have Lisa Howard, and she's in Breaking Dawn 2. She'll be playing Siobhan. And last night she went to the premiere of Breaking Dawn 2, so it should be an interesting show, and I invite you all to join us. Dawn, I don't have it in front of me. Is that at 7 p.m. Eastern?
That is, no, tomorrow night's interview.
No,
will be
tomorrow's
at
9 p.m. Eastern, right?
I'm sorry?
Is it 9 p.m. Eastern tomorrow?
Lisa's at 9 p.m. Eastern tomorrow, yes.
Okay, 9 p.m. Eastern time,
mm-hmm,
which is
6 p.m. Pacific.
Oh, gosh, 5 p.m. Pacific, thank you. I always have to think about what time, because I'm on Central time, so I go back
actually
from there.
It'll be 6 p.m. Pacific.
6 p.m.?
And, yeah, because 3 hours behind on the West Coast from the East Coast. So,
Six, yes. Okay,
there
6
you
p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Central, 9 p.m. Eastern time. And if you want to call in and speak with her, the phone number is 1-718-506-1540. Be sure to press 1 so we know that we have to pick up your phone call that you want to speak with her. She's also a singer. She has a new CD out. She's been on Broadway, so it should be a very interesting interview, so I'd invite you all to join us tomorrow.
Yeah, I'm sure there's going to be lots to talk about in terms of the movie that's coming out, which, you know, the premiere is Friday, and for all the, you know, I've been seeing tweets in the feed all day long, all over Twitter, you know, people talking about how excited they are and they can't wait. They've got their tickets already. And, you know, it's going to be a great, great movie, and so many people are just poised and ready. So, yes, it should be, who knows what she will tell us about that movie. But for any of you that are diehard, please call. So, We are glad to hear
you. Oh, and I also wanted to add, too, if anybody hasn't been on Vincent's website, I would advise you to go on there. There's so much on there. Things that he's done in the past as well as what he's going to do in the future, fan events. There's videos on there of when he was on All My Children and Young and the Restless. There's a lot to see. And so you would go to vincent-irizarry.com. And then also you can follow him on Twitter at Vincent Irizarry. I know he has a Facebook. I don't have that link off the top of my head, but I would imagine it's facebook.com/ Vincent Irizarry. If you put it in the search, you'll find it. So I want to thank you, Dawn, for joining me again tonight. I know there's a lot of you out there that don't know what happened, but right in the middle of taking phone calls, the power went out in my house, and I lost everything, my phone, my internet, everything. And I was freaking out, and I was texting Dawn, please pick up the calls. I'm not there, you know.
Well, I must tell you kudos, because as a true professional that you are, I never knew it. Actually, when I got this message saying, do you want to end the episode? I'm like, what? And I was immediately checking, and I was like, oh, but I can still hear. So I'm not disconnected. What's going on? And all of a sudden, I realized I didn't see you at all. And what happened? And then you sent me the text. So, you know, this is the behind-the-scenes mania that no one knows about unless we tell it. But, Pam, I mean, you played it off. Even if you hadn't texted me, you'd come back. I would have. You just kept rolling with it. You know, you never missed a beat. So kudos to you. But that's why people love you so much, because you are just, you're top notch in what you do. So I don't know that I couldn't have winged it. I'd have been panicking, you know, what am I going to do? But, you know, that's the great thing about two of us running this, because we, you know, if one of us fails, the other can keep going, you know, until the other one sits back in. So it's, you know, but anyway, but I'm glad to be here again. Thank you for allowing me to be here. It's such an honor to speak with him and just to be on the line. It's kind of surreal for me to be this up close and personal with, you know, with these celebrities this way, and to be able to, you know, them share with us, you know, who they are out of character, per se, you know, because it's so funny. I love the story he told when he was on Guiding Light and the person came up to him in the street and started berating him about, you know, falling in love with death. And, you know, it reminded me of a funny story. I recently heard Joshua Morrow was telling a story very similar. He said that it was amazing how, you know, soap fans sometimes have a hard time separating fantasy from reality, or the fiction from reality. And he said he was going through an airport one day to catch a flight, and he said it was a rather obese lady is how he termed it. I was like, why did you have to say that? But anyway, he was hilarious. He said she came up to me in the airport, and she said, Nick Newman, because he was talking about how people always call him by Nick Newman. They don't ever refer to him as Joshua Morrow. And said, Nick Newman, and he said, of course he turned around. And so this lady just hollered up and slapped him. And he said it was the storyline way back in the day when it was the gal who now plays on Bold and the Beautiful. She's off and on. She's one of the Logan sisters. I can't think of her character name on Y&R. But this was way back in the day when Nick and Sharon were very young. But she was supposedly Sharon's best friend. She comes to Genoa City and starts working at Jabot or at Newman, and her and, you know, Nick kind of start having a fling. Actually, they did have a fling. And apparently this woman was all engrossed in the storyline, and she just hollered off and slapped him there in the airport. And he says, hold on, ma'am. He says, I'm Joshua Morrow. I'm not Nick Newman. I'm only Nick Newman when I'm on set. Please don't ever do that again.
Oh, my gosh.
Could you imagine, though? But, you know, I guess in truth there are some fans that do get that caught up in the storyline. And, you know, I've found myself, you know, often – like Vincent is a great example. I've always called him Lou Jack, just because when I first was introduced to Vincent was when he was on Guiding Light as Lou Jack. And, you know, to me, he was always Lou Jack. So, you know, so it's easy to do. It's very easy to do when you really, you know, grow to love certain characters. They kind of grow with you, so to speak. So, anyway, I can't imagine what that must have been like for him.
I know, I can't either. My gosh. And I've never been the type of person to think of
somebody I'm watching on TV as their character on the outside, I may slip up and want to call, like tonight, I don't know how many times I wanted to call Vince and David, and I, but I don't normally do that. It's just for some reason it's so strong with him that I wanted to keep saying David and would catch myself and I would say Vincent. But I would never on the outside see him and say, oh, my gosh, you know, what did you do? Why'd you drug the town? How dare you, David, and call off and smack him? I mean, my gosh.
Yeah, I know. And I'll just give an example. I really, I want to say that last night, which you know this, but I'm going to tell the listeners, last night I actually, for the first time, after we got off air with Eileen, I was so intrigued by, the discussion you had with her about her current storyline back on Days, that it piqued my curiosity. And I've been seeing people tweet about Days and the whole Wilson thing and just different aspects of Days' storylines. And I was like, you know, I really need to just go watch an episode and see what it's all about. Oh, my gosh. Within minutes, I'm talking literally 3 minutes maybe, I was sucked into that show. I could not stop watching. I was like, well, no wonder people rave about the show. And apparently the writing is just really good right now. And, wow, I was really taken with the show and what unfolded. So,
you were grilling me yesterday. Who's this? Why is that? So,
I was a Days person, people. So, you know, if you see me tweeting, who is so and so, and you watch Days, please feel free to tweet me and say, well, he or she is, and this is what they, because I need to be enlightened. I'll do my own homework too, but anything you can help tell me, that would be great.
Yeah.
Because I'm clueless when it comes to Days. Now, I will tell you that not being a normal, regular watcher or viewer of Days, just in the short span of time that I watched Days, I was like, oh, my gosh, the hottest men in daytime just about. I mean, really, there are so many hot men on that show. It's like crazy, but unbelievable. And the women are beautiful, too. They have their casting director is just, gosh, what a talent to pick the talent, and just a beautiful cast, really. So the acting was so believable. I was just really enmeshed with the storylines, and I was really impressed. So, yes, I actually watched, I was a day behind. I was watching a Friday's episode last night. So, of course, tonight I watched yesterday's episode. So anybody don't tell me, I won't, you know, if I read tweets about it, I won't have a clue what's happening. So I'll have to watch it. Let me know.
Now, Rachel was nice enough too. Rachel's the website administrator for Vincent. She gave me his Facebook. So it's www.facebook.com/Vincent.Irizarry.
Very good.
Irizarry. I saw something else. I'm trying to get back at the thing. Okay. And then dot official fan page. So let me try that again. www.facebook.com/Vincent.Irizarry.official fan page. And join up over there if you're on Facebook, so that way you can go ahead and keep up on what he's doing besides going on the website and following him on Twitter and any other way we're able to access him.
Very good.
Okay, well, so did you have anything else you wanted to add before we wrap up?
No, I probably won't sleep tonight. It's going to take a while to
come out
of this cloud. My gosh, what a great interview and great chat room, you guys. If you're a first-time listener of the show tonight, I just want to tell you that Pam's show just debuted on Saturday of last weekend. So we are rocking and rolling, and tonight we had so many people in the chat room. I'm surprised we had room for everyone. It was amazing. And the calls that came in, and I'm sure the many listeners out there that we don't even know about. So thank you so very much for being here and supporting her and the show and her efforts and endeavors. It's going to be a great ride, and I think you're all going to be real surprised at some of the guests we have booked and coming forward, and just some great shows in store. So just keep following us on Twitter at Take Two Radio, and check out the website at take2radio.com, and that's the number 2, by the way. So
yes, and Dawn is Dawn Take Two Radio on Twitter.
Okay, if you must. If you tweet one, you'll probably get us both, so it's okay. Just, you know.
Yeah.
Look for the Take Two Radio logo in our our tweets, and you'll find us one way or the other. So anyway, and let's not forget our other co-host, who usually will just be on here. Yes, Jay. will be on Saturdays, most likely. So he is Jay Burr, B-U-R-R, 1969 on Twitter if you want to follow him as well.
All right. Oh, and I also wanted to say thank you to Julie for listening in from Australia. And I'm sorry I forgot
yeah.
Vincent that. It was just, there was so much going on, and I do apologize.
I know.
But be sure to
thank
tweet
you.
Him and let him know that you listened in while he was on. And I want to thank each and every one of you. I thank you from my heart, as always, and I'm blessed to have you all and in my life. Thank you, Dawn. Everyone, have
thank
a wonderful
you.
Night, and join us again tomorrow, please.
All right. Have a great night, all.
All right. God bless. Good night, Dawn.
Good night, Pam.